From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Today, we'll be talking about the importance of the Postal Service to rural America and how the agency's financial condition may impact the ability to fulfill its universal service obligation. With me to discuss these crucial issues is Elena Patel, co-director of the Urban Brookings Institute's Tax Policy Center, Posen Director's Chair, and Senior Fellow in Economics at the Brookings Institute. For those unfamiliar with the Brookings Institution, it is a prominent, nonpartisan, 100-year-old American think tank based in Washington. The Institute conducts in-depth, evidence-based research and analysis to provide policy recommendations on economics, governance, foreign policy, and the global economy. It is consistently ranked among the most influential think tanks in the world. So we were honored to have Dr. Patel join us today. Welcome to Naps Chat, Elena.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Elena, you authored two research papers on the Postal Service since the year started. The first related to the financial importance of the Postal Service to rural America, and the other related to the Postal Service's ongoing financial misery. Are these two papers related?
Yes, they are related. They're a part of my broader research agenda to try to understand the value of the Postal Service's network alongside conversations about the financial situation that the Postal Service is in.
And how they interrelate with one another.
They relate in that the paper about the Postal Service in rural America is intended to quantify some of the benefits of the network, seeing the Postal Service as a public good, whereas the financial paper is trying to lay out the current cash crunch that the Postal Service is facing and what its sources are and what that means on a going forward basis.
Let's just get down to basics. Service to rural America is part of the Postal Service's universal service obligation. What is the universal service obligation?
The universal service obligation is like the core of the Postal Service's mission. It's been there since it was established with the founding of our nation. Its mission is to bind the communication needs of everybody in the United States. And it broadly means that the Postal Service is required to serve everybody in the United States, no matter where you live, at uniform and affordable prices with reliable service.
So the Postal Service, specifically the universal service obligation, is a government service.
Correct.
If so, should the government reimburse the Postal Service for providing that essential service, or to what degree should the federal government be involved in providing or financing the service?
It's a really good question. I think about this a lot lately, and I actually like to describe this as a surprise to economists in that since 1970, which is when the current Postal Service business model was established, American taxpayers have been essentially benefiting from a free lunch, which means that the Postal Service was granted a monopoly over letter mail at a time when letter mail was not only prominent as a method of communication, but also highly profitable. And they were using those profits to offset the cost of the USO. That's why I think in 1970, it was possible to say that the Postal Service is an independent federal agency that does not require taxpayer funds to fulfill a public good mission. The problem is that in 2007, the sort of train came off the track, so to speak, with the rise of the internet and digital communication and e-commerce broke down this model. And so where we are right now is that that business model no longer provides a free lunch. The Postal Service is providing really valuable services to American taxpayers. And at this point, it requires that the American taxpayer pay for those services.
I recently viewed, I didn't go to it, but I viewed a hearing conducted by a parliamentary committee in the United Kingdom, and where the discussion before the committee focused on the ability of Royal Post, which is a privatized right. postal system, its ability to meet England's universal mm-hmm. service obligation, and its regulator proposed to reduce the universal service obligation. Is the United States confronted with the same dilemma that Great Britain is currently facing?
Yeah, actually, in other things I've written, I've tried to lay out the point that what's broken in the U.S. business model is broken around the world. All postal operators face the same fundamental problem, which is Letter mail is on the decline. It has been, in many places, even outside the U.S., a protected source of revenue that has eroded. And even in countries where you have private operators or partially private operators in Europe, they're all facing the exact same financial crisis. And what I would acknowledge is in the European model, what is required if you move to a partially private or a private operator is that that operator is directly compensated by the government to fulfill the universal service obligation.
Also, there's a financial burden that the Postal Service has that most foreign operators don't have, and that is paying for health benefits.
Exactly.
Because in most of the European countries, health benefits is paid for by the government.
That's right. And some of their retiree obligations sit at the crux of the problem they face right now.
Now, before we started this podcast, you mentioned that you were recently in Copenhagen,
yes.
Denmark. Denmark decided to eliminate letter mail. They're no longer delivering. Are we at risk in the United States of the same type of outcome?
I worry that that outcome is part of the conversation. I don't think it's a practical outcome for the United States. I think what most people forget, it's easy to forget when you're here, is just how large geographically the United States is compared to Denmark or European countries. And so the scope of the Postal Service's delivery network, its obligations, its operation is so much larger. And my work is focused on highlighting how important that connective service is as infrastructure to rural areas.
Let's move to rural areas now and postal reliant communities, which are not exclusively in rural areas. There could
be
postal reliant communities that are not rural. How does the Postal Service impact these communities?
It impacts consumers and businesses and sort of the fabric of the community. So the post office and its retail footprint, or the post offices that are around the country, they have largely been there for many, many decades. The Postal Service doesn't have the ability, like UPS or FedEx, to close a post office down if there's not enough foot traffic in the building. And so that means that the Postal Service has 33,000 post offices around the country, and every community has one. And in places where banks are closing down, pharmacies are closing down, retail presence is shrinking physically, those consumers and businesses rely on the Postal Service's network to remain connected to the economy. And that's the notion of the Postal Service as part of our infrastructure, like roads and bridges.
I was looking at some data before I came over here this morning that in 1982, and which was the last year the Postal Service received a public service subsidy, and we'll talk a little bit about that later, there were over 30,000 post offices into the United States. Here now in 2026, we're down to around 25,000. Mm-hmm. So there are less post offices. That impacted the communities where those post offices closed?
My research suggests yes. And so what does a post office do in rural or less dense communities? You're right, it does not have to be rural only. You just should think of outside of core urban areas. It supports consumption, people being able right now in an e-commerce world to be able to receive packages for which the Postal Service does last mile delivery. It supports the delivery of prescription drugs where pharmacies are closing. It supports for businesses the ability to receive supplies. So most businesses in less dense and rural areas don't have their own supply chains. They order shampoo from their hair salon through the internet, and it comes, and the Postal Service is the operator that delivers those things. And so my research shows that when businesses are operating in a place where access to the post office is easier, there's more business activity, and that's helping those communities economically.
What I've also found, and this is not exclusively to rural areas, when you are able to shop around on the internet, assuming you have broadband access, you could find the least expensive or the most value-laden product, which you may not be able to do if you only shop locally. So that enables rural America probably to save money on consumer goods.
I agree. And what keeps some of those consumer goods affordable for rural areas is the affordable delivery of those goods to rural community members. And UPS and FedEx, for example, they charge surcharges when you're delivering outside of dense areas, and the Postal Service does not.
And the corollary is if I'm a small business located in a rural area, this gives me access to a nationwide market.
100%. I think that's really important to keep in mind.
You mentioned about infrastructure stability.
Mm-hmm.
Instability, what impact can that have on a rural community?
the instability of the network.
Yes.
I think right now what we see is not so much instability of the network as instability of service that the network is providing. So I think most people know the Postal Service is undergoing some consolidation efforts right now to achieve efficiency. And that's meant they've changed some of their operations in a way that has degraded service, especially for less dense and rural areas. And what I have heard through my work and through being invited on podcasts like this is how much businesses in rural areas and also people who rely on the Postal Service to mail bills or prescriptions are seeing disrupted service in a way that affects them. They aren't getting the feed for their farm on time and their drugs are coming late. And I think the instability of service right now is top of mind for most people.
You point out in your paper, with the paper on rural mail service, that there's not been enough attention that economists have paid to the impact of the Postal Service on rural communities. But it seems quite obvious there is an impact. Why do you think it's been ignored thus far?
I think it's a tough thing to study. And I say that as an economist now, kind of putting my researcher hat on, in that, you know, when you are trying to study the effects of certain policies, usually the way we figure out did policy X do Y is because policy X changes. And in the case of the Postal Service, its biggest asset is the stability of its network. But that makes it very hard to observe, for example, what happens when a Postal Service closes in a rural area to the businesses and consumers around that closed post office. And so that just means like the research has trouble keeping up with the question because there's not a lot of what we call variation in the data to be able to suss those things out. And that is what my paper that you're referencing was trying to do, was take advantage of the stability to get that estimate.
A lot of the attention on Capitol Hill is the disparate treatment that rural America suffers as a result of this reorganization. Yeah. And they particularly hone in on delivery speed.
Yep.
How long does it take for a letter to get to a rural recipient or a product to get to a rural recipient? Did that have any impact on the economy?
Yes, I think that it does. I mean, I would say that if we could get to a place where the Postal Service gets to reliable service, then I think businesses and customers can more easily pivot around, okay, I should now expect that it takes a day longer, so I need to order things a day sooner. Right now, we're in a world where everything is being changed. And because things are being changed, I think it's really the instability that is disproportionately affecting rural America, and that they don't know when to order their prescription drugs or the feed for their farm or their business inputs to get them when they need them.
I found intriguing in your paper that business activity is related to the proximity of a post office. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So as I was saying, research is a little bit tricky in this area. And what I did in that paper was really to like imagine a small town and think about, as a business, if I need to use the post office's services, that is the cost of my time. I need to get in my car and drive to the post office and go to the retail counter and talk to somebody. And those are all minutes that I'm not working. And so that was the intuition of, if I wanted to become an Amazon seller, for example, there's not a lot of commerce in my town, but I can be connected to the economy. How do I do that? If you want to sell products for Amazon, you have to be able to ship them out. And so you should imagine that that's easier the closer you are to a post office. And in rural areas, people can be 30 or 40 miles from a post office.
One of the items that has been looked at in the past, particularly with regard to rural post offices and rural mail delivery, has that the post office has developed into the center of the community.
Yes.
Did your research touch upon that type of aspect of postal?
I wish that it
footprint?
Had. I would say that's still an outstanding to-do item in my research agenda, is to try to understand post offices as the fixture of the community, which I think a lot of more sociology-type researchers will already tell you that work has been done in this area, identifying these as pillars of their rural communities.
When you are a pillar of a rural community, does that have an economic impact?
I think that it does. And I also would say that the post office itself has a quite mechanically direct effect on the economy, in that postal service jobs are good jobs. They have been good jobs for a very long time, in that they're less discriminatory than private employers. People have longevity, long tenure when they work for the Postal Service. And so, again, in places where jobs are disappearing and retail is disappearing, those are also highly valued jobs.
Generally, and this comes back to the universal service obligations, generally accessibility and affordability are two essential elements of the universal service obligation. If we had differential pricing on letter mail, we already have it on parcels, but on letter mail, it costs more to deliver, let's say, to Alaska,
right,
and to send something to Alaska versus sending it across the town, how would that impact the economies of rural areas?
I mean, I think that would just further disproportionately negatively affect rural areas. That is a core of the United States universal service obligation, that the prices are uniform. And across a country as large as the United States, I think that uniformity is a really important pillar of the USO.
Over the years, we've been told that the Postal Service and postal services are essential because of the limited access to the broadband connectivity mm-hmm. within these communities. Is that necessarily true, or do they work hand in hand, the post office and broadband connectivity?
I looked into this a little bit with my research, and what I found is they're much more complementary than they are substitutes. And by which I mean, I think even in rural areas, if you went to 100% broadband, there still is a very important role for the Postal Service in what we just talked about, which is the physical delivery, especially of packages, but also bills and contracts and things that require wet signatures. All of that is physically delivered by the Postal Service. And it doesn't, to my mind, seem like that goes away when you go up to even 100% broadband. I also think people don't realize how spotty broadband coverage still is in the United States, where it's still barely at 80% when you go out of dense urban areas that you have access to broadband at all, even in 2026.
If we would take the approach, as some would suggest, that we reduce delivery days in certain areas that are less population dense, that we have differential pricing for different types of areas, that speed is impacted, all things which are mm-hmm. being considered, which would impact not only accessibility and the universal service obligation, but economies, but also American public's reservoir of goodwill about yeah. the Postal Service. What do you think would happen?
I think that that's not a policy that, if you asked, for example, politicians, is something they would support, because it is so clearly discriminatory against certain Americans based on where they live, which goes against, given the Postal Service is a public operator, it goes against the notion of public goods. We don't think that rural economies should only have dirt roads. We think that they should have paved roads like the rest of the country, and they should have equal, uniform, affordable access to the postal network.
What impact do you think rural economies have on the national economy?
I think they have an incredible impact on the national economy. One, they're consumers, and I think that FedEx and UPS and Amazon is trying to reach those customers. And I think most people miss, they think that the Postal Service is being subsidized to deliver letters to people's homes. But Amazon, UPS, and FedEx also rely on the Postal Service as a business input to get the goods of e-commerce to less dense and rural areas. And so my suspicion is that any conversation about that misses the point that these may be small in number, the people who live in rural areas, but it's a huge chunk geographically of the economy, and we would be essentially foreclosing some of their access to the U.S. economy by not providing postal service out there.
So it is a vital component yes. of the United States economy
correct.
To support the businesses via
yep.
postal operations. The universal service obligation and serving as part of it, serving rural America, has a cost.
Yes.
A cost that is currently borne in some way by postage.
Mm-hmm.
The Postal Regulatory Commission on an annual basis values what that cost is.
Mm-hmm.
That if a private operator would run it, these are services that would not be provided.
Right.
That function, I mean, the Postal Service, we know, has been promoted as a self-financed,
mm-hmm.
independent agency. If it were to be appropriated,
yep.
do you think there's a path to solvency and providing the service to the American public that they expect and demand?
I do. I think that's the easiest, ignoring the politics, the easiest mechanical solution to the problem is for the U.S. to join every other developed nation in compensating the postal operator for the cost of the USO. There's independent analysis of these costs. That's what the Postal Regulatory Commission does on an annual basis. And that could serve as the basis for a regular, I would hope uncontentious, since the PRC estimates it, not the Postal Service, appropriation to kind of close the gap to make sure that the Postal Service is standing on its own two feet with regards to the USO itself.
Interestingly, the last year in which the Postal Service received an appropriation for providing service to just rural America. Now, that's not the totality right. of the universal service obligation. Six-day delivery, uniform mail rates,
right.
Certain reliability.
Maintaining post offices and not closing them.
That's maintaining right. Maintaining yep. and closing. That's all. But if we just look at maintaining the rural post offices, the last year for which the Postal Service got the or asked for the appropriation was in 1982, and that was $460 million.
Right.
In 2026 dollars, that totals around $1.6 billion. I ran it into yeah. my inflation calculator. Yeah, yeah. That doesn't seem like that in a $80 billion mm-hmm. entity. That's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Is it?
I don't think it is, and I think the benchmark actually, I'm a tax person. We talked about it. I'm at the Tax Policy Center. I think a lot of the federal budget, fiscal, and tax issues. What I would say is that the PRC, in addition to the good work that they do to make sure the Postal Service is providing reliable service and maintaining all of their requirements, their estimates suggest that rural access plus all of the other elements of the USO in total cost $6 or $7 billion. We spent $5 trillion on tax cuts last summer. And so in the context of the federal budget, I know we run persistent deficits and there are tax and spending problems that need to be solved. Solving the Postal Service's problem through an appropriation of $6 or $7 billion is so small in the grand scale of what they do and what they support in the U.S. It's surprising to me they haven't asked for the appropriation. And I think there's an easy path forward, which is to just compensate them for the cost of the USO.
And the irony is when you listen to members of Congress, they focus on those elements of the USO that are most important
right.
to them.
That's right.
So it would seem like a no-brainer.
It does to me. I think that there's hesitation on both sides. I can understand the Postal Service's hesitation about accepting appropriations as right now the Postal Service is also in a fierce competition in terms of the market with Amazon, UPS, and FedEx to compete to deliver packages. And they need to be able to operate with autonomy and be flexible to be able to pivot and respond to the market conditions. And so if the money comes with strings attached, where you have to ask Congress for permission to make changes, slowing all of that down, it will, I think, be really detrimental to their ability to participate in the market as an independent agency. And so I think the worry could be, if we're appropriated funds for the USO, what strings come with that? And that's some of the balance.
The concern is the USO only applies to letter mail.
That's right. There are some delivery products that are also part of market-dominant mail, but I think most people think mostly of letter mail.
Right.
And it was born in a time in the late 1700s when we weren't imagining package delivery. We were imagining letter delivery. So I think of the USO including that last-mile element of package delivery.
Actually, at the time of the colonial post office, they were thinking about mailing periodicals
right,
primarily.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. So we've come a long way from that, but its roots are in letter mail and periodicals. I agree.
Yeah. Last question for you, Elena. I remember back in 2015, I attended a symposium in this building at the Brookings Institute on the future of the Postal Service. That conference was hosted by Elaine Kmark, who is a senior member of the team over here at Brookings. And as they say, the future is now.
Yep.
If you could go back in time and engage with Elaine, and what would you tell her? What would you recommend in 2015, what you know now?
I think that what was missing that you have with the benefit of hindsight is that in the 2010 to 2020 era, people were really concerned with the retiree healthcare benefit pre-funding and what that was doing as a financial noose around the neck of the Postal Service. And I think they were missing what was sleeping under the hood, which is a more general funding problem, which is retiree obligations are dictated by the federal government. For every other agency, they're also paid for by the Department of the Treasury, so everything is internally consistent. The post office has no control over those costs. And some of why their margins are negative is not because their operating margins are negative. It's because their retiree benefit expenses, including the pre-funding, which was the focus in 2015, but also FERS and other pension things, are all part of the question of who should be financing those? How should they be financed? What is the obligation of the Postal Service? So I would hope that if we could go back in time, one, we could take more seriously the erosion of letter mail, which certainly was on the decline in 2015, but continued to slide down, and also a more holistic approach to how should we be funding retiree obligations? Because it seemed like we solved the problem. We're like, no problem. There won't be any retiree healthcare pre-funding. It's solved in 2021. But that's not true. There are other obligations that now are the problem.
So it's a holistic approach. We need to deal with retirement issues as well as the USO. And probably if we put those things together, the Postal Service might be almost stable financial footing and operate and will be able to continue to perform its universal
service. Yeah, I mean, the Postal Service has an enormous base of retirees. It's one of the largest employers in the country and has been for decades and decades. So that they're experiencing struggles with how to fund retiree benefits is not surprising to me. And it's just an issue that I think Congress should take seriously if any reform is to go forward.
I knew this would be the last question, yeah. But right now there's consideration of proposals in which to recalculate the retirement formula, particularly for those individuals that are retirees that participate in the civil service retirement system, because pre-71 they were government employees, not postal employees.
Right.
And the second aspect of that is a desire to invest retirement trusts funds into securities other than the very low earning treasury bills.
Right.
So if we put all that together, maybe we have a plan.
I think that's the makings of reform. There's one other thing that's worth saying, because I think it's, again, a very easy Band-Aid. The Postal Service can only borrow money from the Treasury, and they can only borrow $15 billion in total, and that's been their cap since 1991, like that nominal value. And the Postal Service is an $80 billion a year operation. And so I also think that that borrowing cap, especially when we're asking the Postal Service potentially to undertake massive capital investments to reorient the network towards packages, they need access to capital. And so I think they need a higher borrowing limit. I think all of those are elements of reform.
Thank you so much. This has been Dr. Ilana Patel of the Brookings Institute. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And I want to thank SnapChat listeners for logging on. Please share SnapChat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
And make believe.